Before I start the schmooze, we have to have orientation. In case we didn't have enough orientation yet. But seriously, we do try every year, and in the summer we think the Hanhoa tries to figure out ways to upgrade and improve the yeshiva to make it both more enjoyable for the guys and more learning. They go together. Because when you're happier, you learn better. When you learn better, you're happier. So one of the suggestions was that we try and work on the shmuzim. The shmuzim has a potential to be literally the highlight of the yeshiva. It's a person can leave the yeshiva with a skill of how to say a shmuz, which is a skill that he has his whole life. He can say a Dvar Torah at the Shabbos table. When he's mavering the Sedja, he can see them just by himself. There's nothing like, it's like the Gemara said in Bava Metzia, Adam Rotze Kav Shalom, there's nothing better than a shmuz that you made up yourself. That's the most inspiring and enjoyable thing. And if a person learns a skill, which is not such a hard skill, but it is a skill to be learned, person can have for his lifetime the ability to say shmuzim, which is a very precious thing. Also, the shmuzim teaches us many chidushim, insights, which are also very fascinating. So we're going to try, have to figure out exactly how to do it, but we're going to try work out a format this year to make a bigger thrust on the shmuzim and giving it perhaps in a more consistent manner, more of the chazaras of shmuz, maybe trying certain times a little bit to stick to certain topics, maybe also so that at least myself will try and maybe give it a little bit more often, the shmuzim, and to work out that there'll be like a pattern in the shmuzim, so it'll be almost like a shir, instead of just a random shmuz, the shmuzim will be like a shir in shmuzim. In general, the shmuz, as everyone knows, the yeshiva has a mesorah and musar from Sabaka. We have a unique way of saying shmuzim. I've been, so to speak, around the block. I've listened to many, many shmuzim. I want to say it because it doesn't sound nice, but it's sort of true that the yeshiva style of shmuzim, which we believe is a mesorah from Sabaka, is a dying art. Kim'at, you will not hear this style of shmuz anywhere else in the world. And it definitely, if you look in the Svarim, it was once very prevalent. It's one of the pleas in the world that certain parts of Torah seem to just like Navarnik, which was the largest yeshiva in Europe. There is kim'at, no remnants of Navarnik left. How could that be? But that's how the world is. It's as much a plea. The style of Sabaka Shmuzim, which you find in so many Svarim, and it's clear that this was almost the dominant style. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz definitely followed this style. But you don't find it today in many places, almost anywhere you go in the world. The style of Shmuzim is not this way, different, some closer, some totally different. So it's a style, it's something to learn, which is precious. It's an art that is not known by so many people. The Shiva had that a shmuz should be mukhrok. Without getting in too much time, I gotta catch a flight besides everything else. But the idea of a shmuz being mukhrok, which was one of the first yisoidas, was that when a shmuz is mukhrok, first of all, it's much more inspiring. It goes into your heart much more because it's much more, has a much more hashpah on a person when he realizes this is what the Chazal are saying. This is what Rashi says. When a rabbi gets up and he says something and you wonder whether, okay, so the rabbi says that, but who says that that's right? He made it up. I can make it up something too. But when the person shows you this is what Rashi is saying, and Rashi's basis, Rashi here, is not a Rashi, it's a Gemara in Kedushin. So this is what the Gemara is saying. It's mukhrok. The inspirational part is much greater. The second part is the intellectual chiddush part is much greater, because Rashi could say chiddushim, which we're not allowed to say. There's a certain, each person is limited by who he is to how radical of a chiddush you can say. The greater the person can say more radical chiddushim. So the Chazal were able to say chiddushim that I would have no right to say, because how do I know? And therefore, a shmuz, which is mukhruf, gives us two major advantages. It gives us much more inspiration, and it gives us much more depth and insight. So we're going to try and teach the skill, either in the shmuz or, you know, Beshem the whole year, of how to say a shmuz that's mukhruf, to analyze the shmuz that's mukhruf, to see why a shmuz that's relevant, to try and apply a shmuz. Okay, we'll see. We'll start easy today, and what I would like also to do is to continue with certain themes as one shmuz builds into the next. And in Rav Oba, that's how I used to do that he used to stick with a certain theme, and it adds to it instead of, I'm not sure, that's really a very hard thing. I can't promise every week on that, but it's over the year to stick with certain themes and develop them to a higher level. Okay, we have a Rashi, a plain, simple Rashi, which is almost the first Rashi in the Parsha, that when you go to Milchama, you see an Eishes Yifas Toar, which means you see this woman who's dressed so beautifully, and the Torah allows you to go ahead and marry her, be with her. So Rashi says, L'odibra Torah k'neged Yetzirah. Really, normally, we know Bo'o Aramis Kanoim Poigimbo. Normally, a person is not allowed to marry a non-Jewish woman. Zimri married Habia with a non-Jewish woman, Pinchas killed him. Boa Ramis Kanoim Poigimbo. Here, all of a sudden, the Torah tells you you're allowed to do it. How could it be? Torah says, really, it's something that's wrong, would be intrinsically wrong. And normally, in a normal situation or setting, the Torah would answer it, as they answered it by Zimri. But here, the Torah was matir it because of the Yetzirah. Shemein HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira, Yaisenu b'Isser. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized if he's going to say it's Usser, then people will do it anyway. And therefore, you'll have a bigger problem. Meaning, this is, I don't want to get off on a tangent of Hashkafa, but there's a nice Hashkafa here that every Aveira is a dual Aveira. Every time a person does an Aveira, you're really doing two Aveiras. The person eats non-kosher meat. So there's an intrinsic aveira. Why? Hashem didn't just stand randomly say meat's not kosher. There's a reason for it. Because there's a ruach atumah. Either the Hashem put a ruach atumah in non-kosher meat, whatever it is. So when a person does, there's a certain intrinsic avla in doing an aveira. But it's also because Hashem said not to do it. Even if Hashem would say, a silly, something has no logic. The Shem said, don't eat chicken. Even though there's nothing wrong with chicken, that would also be an aveira because you're not listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here, the intrinsic chisarin and bo aramis exists. Intrinsically, you're having beer with a goy, it's intrinsically wrong, and therefore, as Rashi will say, there be certain ramifications. It's going to cause unhealthy results. If you eat a food that's unhealthy, you get sick. That's nothing to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's, so to speak, that's the intrinsic part of the Metzius. If you eat non-kosher food, even Be'ones, could be, it has a certain Ashba. Every Avera has Ashba. But so your Bo'a Ramis, it has a Hashba, as Rashi says, that your kids become a Ben Tzora Meirer. But besides that, every Avera has another dimension, which is probably the more serious dimension. This is the worst dimension, that you're rebelling against Hashem. That's a much, much serious dimension. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not, if Hashem would have said it's Usser, there would be a rebellion against Hashem. Hashem did not say it's Usser, Hashem said it's Mutter, so that because they didn't want to be machshel people, that they should be over on the problem of rebelling against Hashem. So therefore, Hashem made it mutter, because really Hashem would have wanted, so to speak, to make it usher, but realizing that they can't, because then people are going to do it anyway, and then they're going to be over on merida against Hashem. So Shimon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira, if Hashem wouldn't have made it mutter, Yisena b'Isser. Avo, however, in Nasa Sofri HaSoina, the end result, because of the we see from the continuation of the parshas, and if you marry her, you will end up hating her. Shenemar achrav kitena ish. V'sofa lahoda b'yemenu ben sarah meira. N'nachach nismo parshas haro. And then the next parsha, which talks about a ben sarah meira, it will come about from this marriage. Okay. That's the Rashi. Rashi says a very interesting thing. Rashi says that if Hashem would have made it usher, people would have done it anyway. Now, I don't think that means that Moshe Rabbeinu would have done it anyway. Moshe Rabbeinu probably is a big enough tzaddik that he would have controlled himself. But the person that the Torah speaks to, certain average, whatever, that he would have done it anyway. So we have a very big unknown. Every shmooze, the first thing you do in any shmooze is you ask, who are we speaking about? Because, you know, if I would say that Joe Schmo would do it anyway, that's not a chiddush. If I would say that Moshe Feinstein would do it anyway, that's a tremendous chiddush. So the question is, when the Torah says he would have done it anyway, are we talking about Joe Schmo the shoemaker? Or are we talking about the Vilna Gaon and the Chafetz Chaim and Moshe Feinstein? Right? Don't know. Don't know because it doesn't say. But the truth is it does say, if you're Medai carefully. How does it say? Because Rashi says that the Torah is continuing a flow. The Torah is saying, I'm allowing you to do it. Because if I would ask her, you'll do it anyway. But still, the event that's going to happen is that you're going to have, there'll be a Ben Sarah Meira, which means that the next parsha, Ben Sarah Meira, is spoken to this person, because he's the one that has a Ben Sarah Meira. And what does it say in the parsha Ben Sarah Meira? That if you have such a son, you're supposed to take him to Bezin and tell Bezin, my son did not such a terrible thing. He ate a certain amount of meat. He drank a certain amount of wine. And Ben Sarah Meira is Chayav Misa Al Shem Sofo, because we assume that he's going to do in the future a certain terrible averus. But he hasn't done anything so terrible yet. And the father and the mother take him to Bezin and tell Bezin, this is what our son does. And they basically get their son killed. Now that's a pretty high level of sitkus. To go ahead, to take your child, in order for it to be a Ben Sarah Meira, the mother and father has to take him to, it's not with Adim. I mean, maybe you need Adim too, but the first step is that the mother and the father has to take the child to Bezin. If the mother and father don't take the child to Bezin, a Ben Sarah Meira is not Chayav Misa. So the person that we're talking about is a person, Rashi says that the Feresh, who's gonna read the next Parsha, he's going to have a Ben Sarah Meira whose kid's not, you know, seems a little rebellious, so to speak, and the parents are going to take him to Bezin and get the kid killed. Now, that is an Akedas Yitzchak. You know? That's a very, very high level of sitkis. To go ahead and to take your kid killed in Bezin because he's Al Shem Sofo, because we know in the future he's going to go off to Derech. Okay, and if who says he didn't go up the Derech yet? Maybe he won't go up the Derech. And even if he does go up the Derech, I still love him. He's my kid, you know? No. So that means that we're talking here about a person who's able to go ahead. He has that a strength of Emunah to trust the Torah, to go ahead and Emunah, to go Meister Nefesh, to go ahead and kill his own son. Because the Torah says that that's the right thing to do, because mutav v'yom hazaka v'yom hazchayv. But he doesn't have the strength to withstand the nisayin of an eishes yifas tar. Does that make sense? If he can go ahead, you know, and muster the strength to kill his own son, v'shem shamayim, can't he just control himself not to be mezana? I mean, what's better? What's more important? A son or being a 5 minute fling with a mezana with someone? You know, a son is 50 years, 100 years, this is your whole life. You know, come on, this is, you raise a kid, not a baby, you raise him, he's 13 years old now, you raise him, you're 13, you know, you love the kid. So there's a tremendous chiddush here. It's a tremendous chiddush in the power of a certain type of Yetzer Hara. There are different types of Yetzer Hara. The Gra and the Evan Shleima talks about this as Chemda and Taiva. There's different types. There are intellectual Yetzaharas and emotional Yetzaharas. A Ben Tzora Mora is an intellectual Yetzahara. It's an intellectual decision. Obviously, it's very emotional, but it speaks to the intellect. Is it the right thing to do to give up my life or the wrong thing to do? Is it the right thing to do to give up my son's life or the wrong thing to do? And a person who's a tzaddik, obviously we're not talking about a Rasha, but a Chafetz Chaim or the Gror, I don't know exactly who we're talking about, can make the intellectual decision that, yes, this is the right thing to do. But the issues of Astomar is pure emotions. You're in war. And all of a sudden, you're always fighting, and you're emotional, and you're worked up. And then on the spur of the moment, there's this girl, and she's dressed in this amazing way, and she's trying to entice you. And it's just the tivus. It's a different thing completely. the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh brings an example of the difference. He says, if you take a person who's very poor, okay, and you go ahead and you dangle dollar bills in front of him. It's not going to do anything to them. And you take it, you burn the, here, you want him a dollar bill? Here, you can't have it, I'm going to burn it up. But you take a guy who's starving and you roast meat in front of his cell. He says, that was one of the tortures that they used to do in some of the nice prisons. He says, people would go mentally insane from the smell of the meat when they're starving. So it's a different type of thing. There's the taivas, physical taivas, have a different effect on a human than intellectual taivas. You don't have a physical taiva for a dollar bill, but you have a physical taiva for a piece of meat. And when you're hungry and you're starving and I smell it and I see it, then my whole body goes crazy. Then I can go mentally insane. So Asha Shifas Soar is a strong, in a certain sense, even though any normal, rational person would, of course, say, I'd much rather have my son than an Eishes Yefas Toar, of course. But on the spur of the moment, the taiva of Eishes Yefas Toar is stronger. So, Chiddush number one is we see the strength of these taivas. What's the relevance? The relevance is that, obviously, the Torah was matter in this situation. A person's going out to war. He has to go to battle. It's for the sake of Klal Yisrael. And the Goyim used to try to entice them to make them help those how they fought the war. But Zimri didn't have this heter. Why didn't Zimri have this heter? Because he had no excuse to do it in the first place. In other words, there is to hear that there is such a tremendous Yetzirah. The only way, really, to avoid being nichshol is avoid putting yourself in a situation. The person who says that, I'll never be nichshol, me, such a tzaddik, you know how big of a tzaddik I am? I went in and did a Ben Tzora Meira. I was Meiser Nefesh. You think I can't walk into this place and control myself? He's an idiot. Yes, you can't walk into that place and control yourself. That's the first chiddush. The first chiddush, which is a very important and relevant, is the tremendous power of emotional taivas. Okay. Chiddush number two, which we have a Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin brings a question whether a kayin is mutter yifei tawar. So the Gemara brings a machlokes Rav and Shmuel. So the Gemara says as follows: But be a rishayna kuli amad opligi d'shari. Do not tibetarik neged yetsahara. That's in the first bia, even though the guy's a kohen, and there's more reason for it to be aser. But what's the difference? Even with not a kohen, it should be aser. Boa ramis kanda and pligimbo. Teretz says Hashem was matter because he felt people can't control themselves, so they can't control themselves. So if you're a kohen, you also can't control yourself. There's more reason to be aser. So what? So Bia Rishayna is definitely mutter. Ki pligi, so what's the machlokes? But Bia Shniya. Rav Amar mutter, because there's some svar of Hov Ishri Ishri. Once Hashem makes him mutter, it's mutter, which we're not going to go into. Pishmu Amar Aser. Why is it Aser? It's an incontrollable taiva. So Rashi says, the last Rashi on the sheet, which is, that's what he chopped it. But Bia Shniya, Shkar Niskara Rucho. Be a shniya, ready. You're ready. Don't have the same taiva. Now, I'm reading this Rashi. Makes no sense to me. I don't know about you people. You went ahead and had supper. Now, a day later, a week later, they're serving supper again. Say, well, you want to eat? Didn't you eat a week ago? But it was a week ago. You know, Biyashnia doesn't mean immediately. Biyashnia means a week later, a month later. Who knows? She's in your house. It's a week later. You had Bia yesterday, a week ago, a month ago, 2 months ago. It's over. You know, I ate supper yesterday. They had a piece of cake. They served cake. You had it yesterday. Now they serve the cake today. You had a piece yesterday. What does that have to do with anything? But I'm hungry now. Now they're serving it. You served it yesterday. And if anything, it goes against so many chazals. Everyone knows, or not everyone knows, but everyone should know, there's a famous chazal that says, Eiver katan yesh adam. Eiver katan means a person has a small limb, which is literally referring, happened to be the Eiver, the limb which a person has relationships with women with, where the zera comes out. It's a very small limb. And it's the chazal say, Mazbio marevo. If you starve it, if you satisfy it from the chalta v'savata, masbio, if you satisfy it, you make it hungry. Means the more you indulge in it, the greater your taiva becomes. Masbio, marevo, masbio. And if you starve it, you satisfy it. And this is a rule, a known rule in all taiva. People that indulge more in taivas have greater taiva. The person who is a big eater, well, in a nice way, who he eats, and then he always eats a lot, and another person who barely eats, and then they, now neither of them have eaten for a day, and they walk into a room after a tinus, and there's a food, the guy who is a big eater will grab and have much more of an urge to eat than the guy who barely ever eats. Because, mas bio marevo, the more you indulge in a taiva, the stronger it becomes. So a person, and the Chazal said, as far as this Aveir itself, as far as Eber Katan, it's talking about Znus. The more you indulge in Znus, the stronger your Taiva becomes. That's the Gemara. All over the place. So what's Rashi talking about? Rashi says, Bia Rishayin is Mutter, because it's uncontrollable. Bia Shniya, what do you mean? You're ready to Bia Rishayin. So what? It's the opposite. It should be a Kal V'Chomer. Bia Shniya is a stronger Yetzar than Bia Rishayna, because Masbio Marevo. The more I indulge, the stronger the Taiva becomes. I think it's a very good question. And I think there's a tremendous Yisai that Rashi's saying here. That you're right. Bia, if a person had Bia twice, he has a Bia twice, then he has more of a Taiva than he had Bia once. And if Bia had Bia three times, he has more of a taiva than he has previous, had Bia twice, and etc. The more you have, the more taiva goes up. Except there's one exception. From 1 to 2, it's supposed to go down. From 2 to 3, it goes up. From 3 to 4, it goes up. Why? Because by the first time, there's a reason why you have so much taiva. Because taiva is illusion. Taiva is a world of make-believe. Taiva is always greater than reality. That's the nature of the Yetzirah's trick. Taiva, he fools you. He makes it seem like this is going to be the most greatest pleasure ever. And reality always is not like that. So between 1 and 2, you have learned the lesson that the taiva is not as great as you thought, so your taiva should have gone down. From 2 to 3, okay, every time you do it, must be omarevo. The more you do it, the more you indulge, the more you become a baal taiva. But after the first time, maybe enochinami mitzan, it's in a gabi, so to speak. The gabi, the din of masbio marevo, the taiva will go up from after you do it one time, the taiva will go up. But mitzad, the din, that now you're smart enough to know that the taiva is an illusion, the taiva should go down. So there's a tremendous chiddush in Rashi. That once a person has indulged in a taiva at least one time, then he's expected to use his seichel to realize that taiva is not so great. And even the world's greatest daiva, this daiva that this person or the person who was able to kill his son couldn't have control, but that's before he went ahead and realized what the reality. But once he had a reality check, and once he did it once, then he's expected to be able to conquer it. Because you know it's not such a big daiva. So your intellect should decrease your daiva. And this is a tremendous insight. The problem that I think many of us have, we don't have time, to go into different shmooze at once, but one of the biggest insights of the Bawi Musar is that people get locked in. People get locked in with hashkafas and with ideas, and you have a certain picture in your head, and then you don't let reality change it. A person comes to yeshiva, and he has a picture of what he's going to do when he leaves yeshiva. And then he sticks with that picture, even though he has a whole year of yeshiva, and he realizes that maybe his plans were wrong, but you're locked in. It's a very big problem in life. People lock in. And here, it's a much bigger problem. A person, before he ever indulges in a taiva, he's locked in that this is going to be amazing. He goes in and indulges. He discovers it's not amazing. So an idiot, John, is he goes and does it again. No, it didn't work the first time. You should realize that that's what it is. Learn your lesson. Realize that the taiva is not as, take lesson from what happened. Don't just say, no, my belief is true. It didn't work the first time. It was a fluke. I'll try it again. Oh, second time, I'll try it again. So there's a tremendous chiddush here, which hopefully only applies in certain situations, but at least if we do have a taiva that we did indulge in, maybe improperly, now at least we're expected to know. Now we have much of a less of an excuse because we're obligated to learn from the fact, to stop to think, when I indulged, did I enjoy it or was I walking around depressed for the next rest of the day? How did I feel? So if I went ahead and I did hear whether the way that I didn't really enjoy it, there was no enjoyment, it was barely enjoyable, right? So then you're expected not to do it anymore. Now you gotta be a person with seichel. Now there's no excuse. And this is a terrific vehicle, means to stopping yetzer haras. Okay, it only works if you're a person indulged once. But there are ways sometimes of figuring out other ways of figuring out that taivas don't really exist. You can see from other people, there are many ways. But this is an easiest way. You did it yourself and you saw it wasn't. I once heard from Rav Zuckerman, he's a very big gadol, it's Tanach Chofetz Chaim, that he basically said, this is pshat in the davening, in the Yom Kippur davening. We have here a line in the davening, says Sarnim Yimitzoseh Mishpatecha Atoivin Velo Shavalanu. So there's a shla. He didn't quote the shla. I was trying to find someone who says it. The shla is very cryptic. The shla says Velo Shavalanu Kloimar. Now we know in learning, whenever a person says Kloimar, means he's changing chat. That's where the word Kloimar. The word Kloimar, this time you have to know, Kloimar is when a person's saying a doichik, he's changing from the pashtus, then you say the word kleimar. So the shla is apparently bothered that the simple pshat doesn't make sense, and therefore he's saying a kleimar. He's changing. What does it mean? Avarnu af b'lo reva chashav elanu. So the obvious problem is that that's what it said, b'lo chashav elanu. So, doesn't sound like he's saying anything, and that's a kleimar. So what I heard from Rav Zuckerman, and I suspect is what the Gra is saying, I can't say, this I wouldn't say is 100% mukhruch, but I think it's probably right, I can't say. The other thing I think was mukhruch, is that there's a very big problem with this line, v'lo shavalanu. Because what are you saying? Of course it's v'lo shavalanu. I remember as a kid, there used to be, I don't know if it's, I haven't been in New York for a long time. There used to be the East Side, used to be the place where all the sales were. The yeshiva guys used to always go to get their white and white shirts. I don't know, that was a big place, East Side. And everybody used to have their merchandise on the street. And it was known that that was illegal. And all the stores used to get tickets. So I remember as a little kid going with my father to the east side, and I asked my father, he saw the policeman walking around giving every storekeeper a ticket. And I asked my father, are these people crazy? Why are they putting their merchandise on the street when they're going to be getting a ticket? And my father said, it's obvious, Pashut, because the ticket's for $50, but they make $500 by putting their merchandise on the street. The police is the stupid people. You know, that's America. They give you a $50 ticket, but of course, you're going to do it anyway, because it's worth it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like that. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives an Aveira, and it's going to be a punishment, obviously the punishment is going to be greater than the reward. Otherwise, it's ridiculous. So, what are we saying? V'lo shav alanu, yeshakayach. Obviously, if Hashem said it's usur, then the punishment is going to be greater than the reward. It's by definition. Oh, big chiddush. I did an aveira, and it wasn't worth it. Of course it wasn't worth it. So the answer is, we're not saying it's not worth it because of Hashem's punishment. Forgetting about Hashem's punishment, even I know it's not worth it. Even Mitzidi. Now, there's, of course, Lachar Meyeh Esrim, I'm going to discover, so to speak. I'm going to get, who knows, I'll get such a punishment in Olam Haba, and then I'll realize it's not worth it. But even right now, in Olam Hazeh, right now, where I'm holding now, Bashir Husham, I know it's not worth it. And that's what I suspect the Mishnah is saying. Kloimar af belo revach hashav alanu. I'm not discussing the totality. I'm not bringing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm discussing the revach. Even the benefit wasn't worth it. There was no big benefit. It was a mirage. The revach wasn't worth it. It's not that the revach, that of course it was a tremendous pleasure, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give me a tremendous punishment, so the punishment is worse than the pleasure. I made $500, but I got a ticket for $1,000. No. The revach was, I went against the law and I didn't make anything. I made 5 cents. That's lo shav alanu. The revach wasn't shav. I think that's what the Gishlo is saying. And it's what we're saying now, especially in other words, the question is, if a guy knows that the revach is lo shav, so why to do it? I think if a guy can say that, because Shad is when you did it, you didn't realize it. That's exactly what we're saying. We do Averis because obviously we would never do it if we knew lo shavananu. If we knew that you're not going to get any pleasure, we wouldn't do it. But we do Averis because we're living in a mirage and we believe we're going to benefit. But then afterwards, after the Averis completed, we realize that we gained nothing. It wasn't worth it. It didn't give us any great pleasure. It was a mirage. And the taina on us, that's why we say vida, otherwise it wouldn't be, is that we should have known it before we did the aveira. If there was no way for you to know until after you did the aveira that it's counterfeit, then why are you saying vida? It's not your fault. I didn't know. But the point is you should have known. And that's what we're saying. We're expected to know lo shav alanu, either because of what we just said from Rashi and Kedushin, because from our own experience, or from hearing other people's experience, we're expected to know that many of these taivas are fake. And therefore, if we do it, there's a tremendous taina on us. How could you do this aveira when you should have known lo shav alanu? You should have known that it's zero, nilch, that there's no pleasure. The whole pleasure is non-existent. Okay. Anyway, so therefore what comes out as follows. What comes out is, I think there are two basic chidushim, which I think are both mukhruch, I hope. One is that we have to keep away, have to make harchokas from emotional, physical taivas, especially znus and arayas, because even the greatest tzaddikim can, so to speak, lose control, mental, temporary insanity, so to speak, and a person can be a tremendous tzaddik and still be nichshol, and therefore the only really protection is harchokas. That's, we don't do yichud, we do all kinds of harchokas, because we don't trust ourselves. Even the greatest tzaddik is not out to do yichud. That's the only protection from these taivas. We have to realize that these taivas are so strong. It's an emotional, temporary insanity type of taiva. And two, we have to use a gimmick to go ahead and decrease these taivas by trying to figure out ways to prove to us that it's lo shavim lanu. To prove to us, the more we can hear that these taivas are mirages, that's the trick of working on the Yetzirahs, is to hear that the taiva doesn't really exist. I just want to end there's a Navarnika mushal. The Navarnika mushal is a sadhus that there was, it's from the author from Navarnik, that a person was walking on the street on Shabbos and he saw a whole stack of money, $100 bills stacked up. And someone obviously dropped it, lost it, and he obviously has a tremendous Yetzirah, you know, thousands of dollars, and it's for the taking, except it's muksa. Nope. So he says, the author of the Navarnik says, the guy there is thinking, you know, he's, I'm not going to be over it. It's a real muksa, but I'll move it. He's klacher, yeah, and it's a tzarech mitzvah, and I'll give staka. And he comes up with all kinds of rationalizations, why it's mutter, and okay, I'll be over on a drabbanon, whatever it is. He's about to be nikshol and take it. And all of a sudden, his kid jumps out of the bush, says, ah, we fooled you, monopoly money. He says, at that moment, when they tell him that it's counterfeit, monopoly money, he has no tithe anymore, he has no yetzahara. You ask him, is a muksa? Of course. Are you allowed to take it? Of course. It's fashit. The whole yetzahara disappears when you hear it's monopoly money. So the Avdin of Arik, that's his beautiful mushu, is that the trick in life is that when faced with a tremendous taiva, we have to be able to hear that it's counterfeit, it's monopoly money. As soon as we hear that it's monopoly money, it's fake, it's counterfeit, we don't even need Yiras Shamayim. The whole Yetzirah just disappears by itself. So this is, and I would say one of the ways of doing it is either look at yourself or look at other people that have indulged and see, are they really happy? Are people that are into these taivas? Shiva used to always say about how the movie stars are the most highest suicide rates. You know, to see how the people that are indulging these taivas are not happy. They're on drugs, whatever it is. And especially if a person himself was nichshol once. So to be able to hear, that should help us to be able to hear that it's lo shavalanu, and the whole Yetzirah will disintegrate.